When I looked back, he had sat down in the swing and opened his Bible. Mama was all to pieces as we went down the walk.
"Will, do you think he's gone crazy?" she whispered, her face pale.
After Sunday school, folks naturally asked where was Mr. Tweedy. Looking confused and flustered, which she was, Mama said weakly, "He seems to be ailing." I opened my mouth to say he looked all right to me, but she poked me in the ribs. When we got to our pew, Mama let me know what her real fear was.
"I bet your daddy's up there with Pa and them," she whispered from behind the palm-frond fan she was fluttering like a house afire.
I shrugged, which was supposed to mean that couldn't be it. To tell the truth, that possibility was uppermost in my own mind, even though I couldn't believe it. Papa was anxious to please Grandpa, but not anxious enough to desecrate the Sabbath by singing songs like Bird in a Gilded Cage, or Waltz Me Around Again, Willie. Certainly not Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee. As the Presbyterian preacher commenced his sermon, I was puzzled by the behavior of Mr. French Gordy, who sat with Miss Sarah in front of us, smelling of soap as usual. He kept turning around during the sermon to grin at us, yet when church finally let out, he rushed past and didn't even wait for his wife, much less stop to ask Mama what my daddy was sick with. Everybody else did, however. Mama looked embarrassed and upset as she said over and over, "I don't know, I just don't know what's wrong with Mr. Tweedy." In a minute here, Mr. French came back, his ruddy face beaming, and took my mother's arm. "Mary Willis, how I wish your ma was alive to see this miracle. You and Will come outside and look." When she hesitated, kind of dazed, he pushed her toward the church's big open door. I ran ahead to go see. If Santa Claus had been out there with his sleigh and his reindeer that hot Sunday morning, it wouldn't have been any more surprising than the sight of Papa grinning like a chessy cat from the driver's seat of a big, shiny red Cadillac car. He was wearing a cap and goggles, and his Sunday suit just barely showed under a long linen coat. The automobile had a black canvas roof, slotted rubber tires, and a brass horn, and was shimmying and shaking and backfiring to beat the band. "Papa!" I yelled, forgetting I wasn't supposed to holler in the churchyard. Everybody else had forgot, too. I was the first to reach the motor car, but the congregation quickly crowded around. "Mama!" I called, looking towards the church steps. "Come on!" Mama stood there on Mr. French's arm like she was looking at a man with a tail. She was pure transfixed, mouth gaping, eyes shining. There must have been 30 or 40 people crowded around, and they got quiet just from the sight of her.
"Well, I declare what don't you beat all," she said finally, and then, "Well, I swan, won't Mary Toy have a fit?"
There wasn't a Presbyterian in Cold Sassy who wasn't proud for Mama at that moment. Something good had finally happened to Miss Mary Willis. I opened the back door, jumped in, bounced on the seat, and started asking Papa questions. With all the engine racket, he couldn't hear a word I said. He was busy shaking hands with all the men anyhow and getting slapped on the back and being asked for a ride. Boy, howdy, that was some morning. I'm not sure Mama ever would have made it to the Cadillac if Papa hadn't climbed out and gone to get her. The crowd parted like the Red Sea as he led her to his shaking red chariot. Picking up a new linen coat off the front seat, he held it out grandly for her to put on, then draped a big dust veil over her hat and face and handed her in. When she turned toward the congregation and waved, everybody smiled and clapped. And then the motor conked out. Papa was so excited he liked to never got it started again. He cranked, then showed me how, and I cranked, but nothing happened. "Let me check the directions," he said, reaching in his pocket to take out a little booklet. It said he forgot to use the gas feed. Away we went at last, but we went away a lot slower than if we'd had a horse and buggy. Papa hadn't practiced his driving but for a few minutes before church let out, so he wasn't all that sure he could remember where the foot brake was or how much gas to feed. Also, every time he saw a buggy or wagon coming, he had to stop the car and shut off the motor so the horses wouldn't bolt. It was a slow progress till we were out in the country. As we got to going faster, a grand cloud of dust rose behind us, and folks ran out of their houses to watch us go by. Every time we hit a bump or just missed a squawking chicken, we'd laugh like children. Boy, howdy, what a day. Mama yelled over the racket, "What? I just can't believe it. When did you buy it? Can we afford it? Where did you have it hid? Does Pa know about it?" I kept begging him to let me drive. "No," he yelled. "I better learn how first myself, Will." Coming back into town, we passed Grandpa's house just as he and Miss Love came out on the front veranda with the floor noise. Big Loomis, who naturally took his communion cake in the kitchen, was just coming around the house from the back door as Papa honked the brass horn and we all waved. They were too dumbfounded to wave back, I reckon, or maybe didn't recognize anybody but me on account of the linen coats and Mama's veil and Papa's goggles. Papa didn't stop us so much as slow up. It was grand the way we raced by. "Oh, won't she be jealous?" Mama crowed when we got home. There was no doubt who was meant by she. I felt real satisfied. I knew Miss Love would love to have a motor car, probably more than my mother wanted to go to New York City. So now they were just about even, which was what my daddy had in mind. If you'd paid him to do it, Papa couldn't have stood up to Grandpa and argued to get Mama the trip, but he had the nerve to ride by Grandpa's house and not stop. Chapter 34 Mama put dinner on the table that day while Papa rode Queenie around the block. After we ate, I started clearing out the barn shed for a garage, but couldn't make much headway for folks dropping by to see the automobile. They admired the shiny red paint, blew the horn, tried out the seats, and of course asked to ride. Some were jealous, I could tell. There is a price to pay for having the first something in town. But Leroy, Smiley, Pink, and Dunce McCall were as excited as if it was their folks' car. They asked me all kinds of questions. "What's the choke for, and let me see the toolbox, and how do you start it, and how do you stop it, and how fast will it go?" It helped feelings a lot when, by the next Sunday, Papa and I had practiced enough to take passengers out. Aunt Loma bid first, her and Uncle Camp. Papa took Aunt Carrie home after dinner, then let me drive Pink and them around the block by myself. Later we went and got Miss Effie Bell. Poor old Mr. Bubba, he wanted to go so bad, but Miss Effie Bell thought the excitement would be too much for anybody 102. I think that meant she was scared he might wet his pants. Papa offered to ride Grandpa around, but Grandpa wouldn't even get in. "A car is a fool, dangerous contraption. Worse than a bicycle," he said. "I expect Miss Love would like to go, though." Instead of asking her, Papa said, "I just remembered, Mr. Blakesley, I told Mary Willis I'd be back by now." And we drove off. It was so pointed that I felt embarrassed for Miss Love's sake, but pleased for Mama's. The next morning I hitched up Big Jack to the buggy and took Grandpa and Miss Love and the Mountain of Grips to the depot. They would go to Savannah by train and get a boat there for New York City. Standing in the shade of the cold sassy tree, I watched their train pull out, then drove Jack home, turned him into the pasture with Miss Love's horse, filled their feed boxes in the watering trough, fed the chickens, and got the toy family Bible off the desk in the hall like Mama told me to. She had asked Grandpa for it, and he'd said, "Sure, you can have it, come get it." But Mama thought it best to wait till they left for New York. I hoped it would be years before she looked in that Bible and saw how Miss Love had written herself into the family. I may have said already that on Wednesdays all the stores in Cold Sassy closed for the day at noon. On Wednesday that week we left in the Cadillac right after dinner to drive out to Cuddin Temps and bring Mary Toy home. The trip was up one hill and down another on humpback roads, 2 feet deep in dust all the way. Papa worried about dark thunderheads in the distance. Lord knows we needed rain, but if the road got wet, we'd soon be 2 feet deep in red mud instead of dust. The clouds passed off, though, and we had only one puncture, and everybody at Cuddin Temps liked to have a fit about the motor car. Mary Toy just couldn't believe it was really ours. The purple had faded out of her hair, but it was still a right peculiar shade of red. We got home too late for prayer meeting, so after supper the four of us just sat out on the veranda together in the cool dark. Mary Toy was curled up in Papa's lap in the swing, and Mama sat content beside them. Sprawled on the top step, I leaned against a turned post and listened to the swing's slow creaking. It felt like we were a real family again. "I'm glad you're home, Mary Toy," I said, and meant it. "Will's tired of gathering eggs," Mama teased. "But maybe Mary Toy's forgot how," said Papa, tickling her ribs.
"I ain't either. Cuddin Temp's got a heap of laying hens. Guess what was in one of the nests, Mama? A great big black snake."
"Lord help us," Mama shrieked.
"He was sound asleep," Mary Toy said. "Just nice as he could be. Me and Sarah Christine, we—"
"Sarah Christine and I," Mama corrected,
but I could tell her mind was on the snake, not the grandma.
We petted him. No. Yes'm, and I put him in my apron and went and showed him to Cousin Temp. Lord, help us!
For a while, all you could hear was crickets cricketing and the swing creaking, back and forth, back and forth. Mary Toy said sleepily,
Mama, what am I supposed to call Miss Love? Do I call her Granny?
Say Miss Love just like you've been doing. Mama's voice was hard. She's not your grandmother by any stretch of the imagination. She's only your grandpa's wife, and there's a big difference. On Sunday, which was the first Sunday in August, we drove the Cadillac to the Presbyterian Church out at Hebron for the annual reunion and dinner on the grounds. Grandpa Tweedy and Mrs. Jones were there, of course, and we took them to ride. Next Wednesday, Papa took the whole day off, and we went to Comer and back, which he thought had never been done before in one day. If the Cadillac had been a circus elephant, it couldn't have done a better job of taking Mama's and Cold Sassy's mind off of Grandpa Blakesley and Miss Love. Chapter 35 The car was all Cold Sassy talked about, and all we talked about in the family. You'd think Grandpa and Miss Love had just disappeared, instead of being off in New York enjoying Mama's trip. Then Miss Love's picture postcards of Coney Island and Ellis Island started coming. Most folks who take a trip send postcards. Usually they write, Having a wonderful time, wish you were here, or How are you fine, I hope, or maybe just their name. What Miss Love did, she wrote every lady and schoolgirl in Cold Sassy about something special she'd found for her at the wholesale house. Miss Veda Gooseby was so pleased she came down to show Mama her postcard. It said, I've picked out the nicest pattern for you in some lovely crepe de chine that is just your best color. I can't wait for you to see it. Mrs. Boozer, Miss Alice Ann, not Miss Catherine, came in the store for some flour and sugar one day and told Papa she'd never got mail from as far away as New York City before. She was showing the card to everybody. Miss Love had written her about a stylish cloak that is inexpensive but will look elegant on you. Mrs. Flournoy reported that Miss Love had ordered a whole outfit with her in mind. Loma's card said, Your father wants to pay for a lovely dress I picked out for you. I can't wait to see if I guessed right on the size. You'll be the grandest lady in town next summer. Aunt Loma hooted. Pa wants to pay for me a dress? That'll be the day. And why next summer? Why not now? Well, I'll believe it when I see it. She half believed she had a free dress, though, when here came a card to Mama saying Grandpa was buying her a black grosgrain coat. It will look really ritzy when you ride to church in the new Cadillac this fall, wrote Miss Love. I found all the materials to make a hat to go with it, too. Mary Toy heard only that Grandpa had a surprise for her, but Miss Love wrote other girls about a dress or pattern or a bolt of polka dot material or some such. She knew this would make them start pestering their mamas as to when Miss Love would be back and when would the wholesale house ship the orders. Mama and Aunt Loma grudgingly admired the postcard salesmanship. Papa was beside himself about it. I heard him tell Cousin Hope that the postcards were a stroke of genius. With just a 1 cent stamp apiece, Miss Love had let every lady and girl in Cold Sassy know she had been thought about way up in New York City. Papa said, When word gets out that the shipment is in, it's going to look like we're having the women's missionary meeting down here. I got a postcard. It said, Your grandfather and I thank you from the bottom of our hearts for all you are doing at our house. I hope Mr. Beautiful is behaving. Yours, Miss Love. I kissed yours, and then I kissed Miss Love. The words, I mean. But I felt let down. Everybody else in the family could look forward to presents from New York, but it seemed like I was doing all the work for just a thank you. Tell the truth, I wasn't doing near what I'd meant to, because when I wasn't busy at the store or hurrying through chores at home, I was out driving with Papa, either practicing or going somewhere, or else washing and polishing the Cadillac. It got a layer of dust every time we drove around the block. Smiley and Pink and them worked on it about as much as I did. Lots of times Mama came out there to the barn shed and sat on the milking stool just to watch us. It was like she couldn't believe we really had a motor car unless she could go to ride or sit or look at it one. Tell the truth, we none of us could quite believe it. One morning I was just fixing to run up to Grandpa's and lead Miss Love's horse around some, when here came Fat Leroy Sleep, saying the gypsy caravans were going through town. The gypsies always came in August, telling fortunes, selling lace, tarring barn roofs, trading horses and mules. It was a sight to see. The bright painted wagons with little curtained windows, and the horses decorated with tassels and silver beads. Cold Sassy always turned out to watch. By the time Leroy and I got downtown, the caravans had reached the public well near my granddaddy's store. Several gypsy men were on horseback, riding ahead of or behind their wagons, or leading strings of mules and horses. I still remember a pretty olive-skinned girl I saw that day, riding on a big gray stallion behind a heavy-set man who was dusky black. At the well, he reined in, and the girl slid off to drink from the flowing pipe. Getting up my nerve, I walked over to her and asked politely, "Where are y'all from?" She looked scared and mumbled in a foreign accent, "I do not know." Before she could say anything else or even get her a drink, the man spoke short to her in another language and jerked her back up on the horse, and they rode off to rejoin the caravans. When I told Papa about it, he said he wouldn't trust anybody who didn't know where they came from. I still think about the gypsy girl sometimes. Then as now, you hardly ever saw any olive-skinned people in Cold Sassy. And boy, howdy, she was pretty. I also still think about another girl I saw that day, Lightfoot McClendon. Not more than an hour after the gypsies passed through town, I saw Lightfoot walking the railroad tracks towards Milltown. I was driving the Cadillac, taking some corn and squash and tomatoes to old Mr. Slocum, who was laid up with a bad back. The car made a swell racket, and if I went slow, folks who heard me coming had plenty time to run out on the porch and watch me drive by. They'd wave, and I'd honk the horn. I recognized Lightfoot even when she was way up ahead. But gosh, she was changed. I'd always thought of her as bounding along like a young mountain goat, but now she looked like any other mill hand. Shoulders slumped, head down, hair pulled back tight and plain. She turned as the auto came up behind her, and I saw that her face was thin and pale against the black of her morning dress. Breaking quick, I stopped beside the tracks and blew the horn at her. "Lightfoot," I called. "Come here a minute." She shaded her eyes against the sun.
"Will, that you?"
"Come look here at my automobile." She came running across the railroad ditch to the road, and like a wilted pot plant that just got watered, smiled up at me with the purest pleasure on her face.
"Law, is this here yourn?"
"Well, it's ours. My daddy bought it."
"I ain't never been this close to a motor car afore."
She ran her hand over the red paint of the hood.
"Don't it feel shiny? Can I sit in the seat for just a minute, Will?"
"Better than that. I'll ride you down the road a piece. Hop in." As she stepped up on the running board, I nodded toward the basket of corn and tomatoes in the back seat. "I'm taking those to an old man who lives over on the other side of the cemetery." I wished I could give her the vegetables. It would kind of make up for that bucket of blackberries she'd lost. But her pride was in my way. It would be the same as saying I knew that nothing grew good in the hard-packed clay behind the mill houses, and that mill hands didn't have plows to cultivate the soil deep or money for guano. Well, it was something at least to give Lightfoot her first ride in a car. I tried to make conversation but had to yell over the car racket, and she had such a thin voice I couldn't hear a word she said. Just before turning left at the corner house where Miss Alice Ann Boozer and Mr. Homer lived, I stopped to let her out, then had an idea. "I'm going to turn up this street," I said, "but if you ain't in a hurry, we could drive into the cemetery and sit and talk a while." Without waiting for an answer, I turned the corner and drove through the cemetery gates and down the narrow wagon road that wound around old graves and old trees. I didn't once think to wonder if Miss Alice Ann or Mr. Homer or anybody had seen me turn into the graveyard with a mill girl in the front seat. From habit, I headed for the Tor burial plot. After I cut off the motor, it was really quiet in there and cool under the trees. Lightfoot said, "Just listen to them birds singing. It sure is a pretty place, Will, and so peaceful." "Well, it seems peaceful when I look at old graves like those." I pointed towards the moldy headstones of people I never knew, some of them born 150 years ago or more in Scotland or Ireland or New Hope, Pennsylvania. "But Lightfoot, I feel like I'm going to suffocate when I think about Granny Blakesley or my friend Bluford Jackson laying down there in the dark." An uneasy look came on her face, and she sighed a long sigh. "My daddy passed, Will." Yeah, Papa told me. Said you came in the store. The silence hung heavy over us as I tried to think of something to say. Lightfoot kept rubbing the brass horn with her right thumb. Finally, she looked at me kind of shy-like and asked if I'd been any fights lately. I seen you fighting lots of times at school. You're a good skull-knocker, Will. I blushed under the compliment. Well, I ain't had time for it lately, I said. Anyhow, I mostly fight to keep from getting called a sissy. And it's a way to get my share of whippings at school. If you don't get whippings, they call you teacher's pet. She laughed. Ain't nobody gonna call you a sissy or teacher's pet either one, Will. Well, I reckon. But I mostly fight for fun, like my grandfather does. If I feel like saying to somebody, I bet I can lick you, I say it and we square off and all the boys crowd around, rooting for one or the other of us, and everybody has a good time. I paused and added, but it's a real fight when I'm trying to beat up Hosey Roach. She rubbed the brass horn some more and then said, without looking at me, why come you hate Hosey, Will? I don't know, he's, well, snobby and smart aleck, always got a chip on his shoulder, and he's dirty. She said real low, he ain't got no bathtub like you. I hated feeling ashamed for having a bathtub. Have you seen Hosey this summer, Lightfoot? She blushed. Every day. He works same shift in the mill as me. Will, you'd like Hosey if you knowed him better. He's real smart, like you. Everybody at the mill thinks he's gonna amount to something someday. I mean, you know, get a job that ain't at the mill. Yeah, maybe. Feeling around for something better than Hosey to talk about, I showed her how the gears worked and the choke, and then thought to ask if she saw the covered wagons that came through Cold Sassy last week. Yeah, I went out on the highway to watch them pass. I was thinking it might be folks I knew from White County, but turned out they is from way up in the mountains. My folks is from the hills, not the mountains. Silence. A breeze rustled the leaves overhead and cooled us some. Then Lightfoot said she came through Cold Sassy one time when she was little bitty. They is 10 or 12 families in our wagon train, taking things south to sell in Washington, Georgia. Quilts and arsh potatoes, you know, and them blue mountain cabbages and apples and chinkapins and home twist tobacco. All like that. I grinned. And moonshine? She grinned back. Yeah, I reckon. I remember we stopped in Cold Sassy on the way back home. Went in a store and bought a cast-iron stove and some piece goods and sugar and coffee. Might be it as your grandpa's store. I always remembered Cold Sassy 'cause it is such a funny name. It ain't funny if you know how it came about. You ever noticed that great big sassafras tree, Lightfoot, the one over by the depot? She nodded. Everybody calls it the Cold Sassy tree. Back 100 years ago, it was a big sassafras grove there, and the wagoners going through said that was the coldest spot between the mountains and Augusta. They all knew what was meant if somebody said, let's camp at them Cold Sassy trees. By the time settlers got to coming in, Cold Sassy was its natural name. It still sounds funny, Will. Leastways to me it does, said Lightfoot. Lots of other folks think that. There's talk about changing it to something prosperous sounding, the way Harmony Grove was changed to Commerce a few years ago. Don't you think Commerce is an awful improvement over a pretty name like Harmony Grove? More silence, except for birds twittering and a dog barking somewhere. I felt uncomfortable. Aunt Loma's right, I thought. Southerners can't just sit and not say anything. I said, my granny's great-granddaddy led a wagon train here from North Carolina. They were the first settlers. Had he aired the land? Maybe, I don't know. I think he had a land grant for fighting in the Revolution. Where I come from, most folks just tuck it up. Their land, I mean. Maybe that's what your folks done. Time lagged again till Lightfoot asked, would anybody mind if she looked around some? No, of course not. Jumping down, I ran around and helped her out like she was Cinderella stepping out of a coach. I showed her Granny's unmarked grave. The tombstone ain't come yet, I explained, embarrassed. Grandpa ordered one from Sears Roebuck, but it ain't come yet. Then I took her over to the Sheffield plot. Being as Mr. Sheffield owned the cotton mill, I thought she might like to see where some of his money went. I'm going to show you 2 big fancy headstones for men who weren't dead when they were buried, I said gaily.
They weren't dead?
She was horrified the way I'd felt when Granny told me about it. Stopping before a huge marble tombstone carved like a scroll, I said, "See, Daniel Bohannon Sheffield. He was the Sheffield's only son."
He got buried alive?
No, of course not. Ain't nobody under there. Granny said Mr. Dan married a rich Jew lady in New York and was going to bring her home to meet the family, but Miss Sheffield wrote him not to come. She said anybody who'd marry a Yankee or a Jew was the same as dead, especially if it was a Yankee Jew. Turned out the bride's family shut the door on her, too, but I don't know if they buried her. Anyhow, Mr. and Miss Sheffield put up this tombstone. See, it don't give a date, just says, "Died in a foreign land."
He still living?
Lightfoot looked around like she thought Mr. Dan might be standing behind her. Who knows? They don't talk about him. Now, let me show you the other one. See that big carved marble angel over yonder? As we walked toward it, I told her about Mrs. Sheffield's youngest brother. Granny said he was around my age when the Yankee army came through. Just 14 or 15. The Lacys lived on a big plantation, and they sent this boy down the Savannah River one dark night in a rowboat with a trunk full of money and silver and jewels, all like that. If he made it to Savannah, he was supposed to buy a passage on a ship to England and wait out the war over there, which he did. But when it was over, he didn't come home. Granny said after Mr. Sheffield started the mill and they could afford it, Miss Sheffield hired her a lawyer over in England, and he found out her brother had squandered everything. He was working as a chimney sweep. Wanted to come home.
Well, I reckon Miss Sheffield bought him passage.
No. She buried him. See? Royal Garnet Lacey. Gone, but not forgotten. I plucked a leaf from the oak tree we were standing under and tore it in little bits while Lightfoot studied the gravestone.
Maybe he did die over in England, she said finally. If Miss Sheffield said he is dead, he must have been.
No, he wasn't. Granny said he kept writing letters for years. I laughed, but Lightfoot didn't. She stood for the longest kind of time, staring from one to the other of the expensive tombstones for live men. Then running her hand over the carved angel, she said, "I sure wished I could get one of them angels for Pa." She looked up at me, and I noticed for the first time the lavender blue circles under her eyes. I felt embarrassed her wishing for such. Finally, I mumbled, "Did you, where's he buried at, Lightfoot?"
"Back home. Me and my aunt took him back to the hills on the train. I knowed he weren't going to rest easy in no grave down here."
With that, Lightfoot sank down on the empty grave of Mr. Royal Garnet Lacey, put her head against the angel's stomach, and cried and cried. I didn't know what to do. I patted her shoulder and said I was sorry her pa died, but that just made her cry worse. She sobbed out that he was lucky to be dead. Now he didn't have to work all day after coughing all night, and didn't have to worry about getting enough victuals.
Was he, did he have the TB, Lightfoot, like your mama?
She didn't answer, just sat there and cried some more. Finally, she wiped her eyes on the skirt of her black dress, trying hard to get a hold of herself. When she could talk, she said softly,
"I think maybe Pa did have the TB. Pneumony's what killed him, though. He'd come on him sudden-like. He is deader in hell a day later."
I had never heard a girl say hell, but she didn't even notice she'd said it.
"I wanted to get a doctor, but my aunt, she said he is too fur gone. Said we didn't have no money to waste on no doctor when it couldn't do no good. Oh, Will, I wished I'd have stayed with my sister after the funeral. Buster asked me to. That's her husband. I said thank you, but I ain't going to be beholden to nobody. Buster said I'd earn my keep if and I helped him in the fields."
"Why didn't you stay then?"
I didn't like the way Buster looked at me when he said I could help him in the fields. She picked up a stick and talked on, almost like I wasn't there.
"Anyways, I wanted to come back here and go to school. Amount to something. We is halfway back to Cold Sassy on the train when my aunt, she said, 'Now, Lightfoot, with your pa dead and all, I can't keep you no more lest you go in the mill full time and pay your part. Fast as you learn things, you'll be a-working both sides of the aisle in no time.'
Well, I begged her and begged her, 'Please, let me get one more year of schooling.
but she said her children got 2 years apiece in school and it ain't helped them a bit in the mill. Said if they'd have been born with books for brains, they'd be making bottom wages just the same.
Over near Granny's grave, a jaybird screeched. I stood drawing lines in the dirt with my big toe, saying nothing. Then all of a sudden Lightfoot hit Mr. Royal Garnet Lacey's marble angel hard as she could with her stick. Her eyes narrowed. "Here's somebody ain't even dead yet," she said, poking out her bottom lip, "and I bet his headstone costs more money than I or my people will ever see in our whole lives. It ain't fair."
"No, it ain't, Lightfoot."
I wanted to tell her about Blue Jackson dying so unfair young, but she started crying again.
"Please, Lightfoot, crying ain't gonna help. Hush up now."
"I don't want to hush up. I'm gonna cry the rest of my life."
"Look, I'll carry you home, in the car. Come on, Lightfoot, quit crying and I'll ride you home."
I caught her wrist and pulled her up. And then I kissed her. I swear I hadn't once thought of doing such a thing, and I'm sure she hadn't either. But before you could say doodly squat, my arms had circled her and she had flung her arms around my neck, and I could feel her wet cheek against mine. For what seemed like ages, I just held her, thinking nothing but the purest thoughts, my heart aching for her, so poor and miserable and lonesome. And then I don't know what happened, I was kissing Lightfoot, just like Mr. McAllister kissed Miss Love, on her mouth, her cheeks, her closed eyes, her neck. She kept saying, "No, Will, no, 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 no." But she didn't push me away. My breath came in trembling gasps, and hers did too. I felt dizzy. I was on fire. I pressed her against Mr. Royal Garnet Lacey's angel and wrapped my arms tight around her waist. Just then God spoke out in the voice of Miss Alice Ann.
"Will Tweedy, you ought to be ashamed," said God.
I looked up, and there he stood in a pink and white polka dot dress, pointing his plump forefinger at us. Lightfoot put her arm across her face just like Eve in the garden when God saw her nakedness.
"You girl, I don't know who you are," shouted God, "but I can tell you're from Milltown. Now you just get on home. Will's a good boy from a nice family. You ain't got no right to come to town like this and corrupt him."
God was indignant as all get out.
"Soon as I seen you all right in here, I thought to myself, they ain't up to no good. Will, I just hate to think what your daddy's gonna say."
"It ain't like you see it, Miss Alice Ann. We didn't mean to—"
"I got eyes, ain't I?" God retorted. "Your trouble, Will, you ain't got no shame. Imagine acting like that right inside of your poor granny's grave."
Chapter 36. While I was staring at Miss Alice Ann, my mouth open like a dummy, Lightfoot disappeared, evaporated, just like she had at the depot that day she helped me off the train trestle. She must have run across the cemetery and gone out through the woods at the back. Then while I had my back turned, trying to crank up the Cadillac, Miss Alice Ann disappeared too. I reckoned to go spread the word. I felt sick. I took the vegetables to Mr. Slocum, and when I got back home, parked the car under the barn shed and sneaked up to the loft. I wanted to think about kissing Lightfoot McClendon before I had to think about a whipping. I wanted to remember my arms tied around her. I wanted to feel her lips on mine, her hands on my back, her breath coming in trembly gasps at my ear. Closing my eyes, I groaned and sank down in the hay. Now I knew why Miss Love couldn't stop Mr. McAllister when he was kissing her, despite how bad she hated him. She had lost her senses. Well, I'd lost mine too, and I wanted to stay that way. I wanted to keep a hold of all the feelings that kept passing over me in waves. But I was also scareder and more ashamed than I had ever been in my life. There was no point in worrying about Lightfoot. Nobody would go tell her aunt on her. Even if Miss Alice Ann knew where she lived, she wouldn't think a mill girl was worth the trouble. It was my sins that were as scarlet, not Lightfoot's. I hated it that folks would talk about me. I knew now how Miss Love must feel. Lord, what would Mama say? I wished I was dead. I also wished Grandpa was home from New York. I could explain it to him, how I didn't mean to do wrong. But how could I explain it to Papa or Mama? For that matter, how could I explain a thing like that to Pink and Smiley and them? They wouldn't believe it just happened, that I didn't plan it when I turned in those cemetery gates. They wouldn't understand or care that Lightfoot was crying and I only meant to comfort her. They'd just haw and guffaw and ask how it felt, and did she kiss with her mouth open. She didn't, but they'd never believe it. They'd make the whole thing dirty. All of a sudden, I couldn't stand the suspense any longer, the waiting for Miss Alice Ann to get to Mama. I decided to go tell her myself, the way Miss Love told Grandpa before he could hear it from Miss Effie Bell Tate, or me. There's no use going into all that followed. Telling on myself saved my pride somehow, but it didn't ease the punishment. I got my whipping from Papa and my shaming from Mama to the point I tried to duck out of sight whenever I heard her coming. But what hurt, Papa decided I couldn't drive the Cadillac for 2 months. He was really mad. After the way I'd done bad and brought shame on the family, I deserved the whipping. But 2 months out from under the steering wheel was 6 weeks too much. Compared to being punished for kissing a mill girl, being in mourning for Granny had been like a picnic up at Tallulah Falls. It occurred to me that mine and Mary Toy's punishments never had been equal. Whenever I misbehaved, Mama told Papa and he wore me out with the razor strop. But when occasionally Mama said to whip Mary Toy, why, that was something else entirely. Taking a rolled-up newspaper, he would jerk her up to her room, and from downstairs we'd hear him speak harsh, "Now, young lady, bend over that bed." Mama would cringe hearing the blows fall. What she didn't know was that Papa would whisper to Mary Toy to start hollering and then commence swatting the mattress instead of her. Mary Toy told me about it one time. If I thought about Mama, that seemed like a good joke, but if I thought about me, it made me mad. I realized Papa was strict and hard on me because a boy had to amount to something, whereas Mary Toy didn't, being a girl. But just the same, it made me mad. I didn't go anywhere the next day except up to Grandpa's to feed and water the horse and mule and Granny's chickens. But the following day there was no way out of it. I had to help at the store. It seems like everybody I saw took up for me, even Miss Effie Bell. She lectured me good right there in the store, but it was about mill people. "Stay away from them folks, son. They all sorry and no count and good for nothing. You ain't a bad boy, Will. You was just led astray." After she went out, Uncle Lige put his arm around my shoulders and said, "Naturally, you gone sow some wild oats, boy. We all done it. But right now you just a mite young. Wait till you old enough to be careful not get caught." Later, Aunt Loma came in carrying Campbell Jr. and patted my shoulder like she was forgiving me for doing evil. "Now, Will," she whispered, "be sure and write down about you and that mill girl." Gosh, I wouldn't have written that down for anything. I left for dinner early. I didn't want to walk home with Papa. But as I hurried across the street just before reaching the depot, the old men playing checkers on a barrel head under the cold sassy tree winked and grinned at me. It's to my credit that when Smiley and them talked dirty about it and old men sniggered and spoke of wild oats, I felt even more ashamed than when I'd told Mama and then had to listen while she repeated it to Papa. It's not to my credit that ever since Mr. McAllister came to town, I'd had a deep-down itch to kiss somebody the way he did it and see how it felt and all. I think I had Miss Love in mind, but I knew that would never happen. If I hadn't watched Mr. McAllister, I wouldn't even know about kissing like that. I might have put my arm around Lightfoot till she stopped crying, but probably I wouldn't have kissed her at all. She was not a bad girl or common either, and I hated it that she would think I didn't respect her. She'd know I wouldn't kiss any girl from a nice town family the way I kissed her. When Grandpa and Miss Love left for New York City, nobody knew how long they would be gone. "It just depends," Grandpa had said when Papa asked him. "But I go guarantee you I ain't going to stay a day more than I have to. I can stand them Yankees just so long before my arm goes to hurting." They had been away for nearly 2 weeks. "Doing no telling what," as Aunt Loma put it, when on August 13th, Papa got a telegram that said, "Arriving 11:40 a.m., August 16, E.R. Blakesley." I tell you, on the morning of August 16th, we were all mighty excited. I naturally got up early to go groom Miss Love's horse and see if everything was all right up there. I don't know whether it was Mama's idea or Papa's, but it was decided to invite the travelers to dinner. Maybe what did it was Miss Love's postcard promises, but bygones almost seemed to be bygones as Mama and Queenie bustled about, fixing a Sunday dinner despite it was only Thursday. Papa ordered ice from Athens for the lemonade. Mama put out the goblets and good china and good silver and invited Aunt Loma and Uncle Camp and also Aunt Carrie, who was back from visiting her cousin in Athens. Aunt Carrie, remember, was the one who read poetry, studied Latin and Greek, talked cultured, believed in human excrement, and put mourning dye on Mary Toy's hair for Granny's funeral. It really pleased me, seeing places set for Grandpa and Miss Love. She hadn't eaten at our house since before Granny took sick, and Grandpa hadn't been there for a meal since they got married. If Mama was letting Miss Love in the house, maybe she'd let her in the family, too. Papa came home to get the Cadillac and drive it to the depot. "I know Mr. Blakesley won't ride in it," he said as he left the house, "but I can bring Miss Love and their grips." Right after he left, Mama looked up from peeling peaches and said, "Will, I just thought. Maybe you better go take the toy Bible out of the parlor. Let me think. Well, put it on my dresser upstairs." I did as I was told. Laying it on the dresser, I felt a wave of grief for Granny, wishing she could be here today with us eating on the good china and all. On an impulse, I turned to where her life was recorded. Gosh, no wonder Mama wanted me to hide that Bible. She had nearly wore out the page erasing Enoch Rucker Blakesley married Love Anna Simpson on July 5, 1906. Hearing the brass horn just a honking, we all rushed out. There was Grandpa in the front seat by Papa. He was the one honking the horn. Miss Love was in the back, squeezed in between two mountains of grips, boxes and hat boxes, and boy howdy, dressed fit to kill in a new fall outfit. She was probably hotter than heck, but by dern, she sure was fashionable. Grandpa was so taken with the automobile, he hardly noticed anybody except me. Stepping off the running board, he slapped me on the shoulder and said, "Gosh a'mighty, Peter Rabbit, Will Tweedy, these here automobiles is something else and then some." "Sir, I thought you liked mules better." "Even a dummy can change his mind, son. I've rode every dang automobile in New York City. Stanley Steamers, Fords, Holzmans, Pierces, Buicks, Cadillacs, all of them. Of course, Miss Love had to push me into the first car. It was a Franklin, and I'd just soon been caught in the compress down yonder at the cotton gin. Scared me half to death. But you can get used to anything." Catching Miss Love's eye, he grinned at her. "Mr. Blakesley held on like he thought that Franklin might fly," she said, teasing. "But next day he couldn't wait to try it again." While everybody laughed, Mary Toy peeped out from behind Mama's skirt. "Why, Mary Toy," said Miss Love, "you've come home." "Go kiss your Grandpa, Sugar," said Mama. Grandpa bent down for the kiss, gave Mary Toy a penny and said how much she'd growed, then straightened up and slapped the hood of the Cadillac the way a horse trader slaps the flank of a fine stallion. He said, "I done joined the dang 20th century, folks. Gosh a'mighty, a motor car is a marvel. A dang marvel. Hoyt, I sure am proud you got one." Queenie and Mama had dinner nearly ready to be served up, but Miss Love had brought some of the boxes in with her, and nothing would do Grandpa but to open them and pass out his presents. He had done so little gift-giving in his lifetime, he was like a child who's learned a new trick. As Miss Love had promised, there was a black row grain coat for Mama, and for Loma a thin, expensive-looking white dress with big pastel flowers embroidered on it. Aunt Loma liked to have a fit over that dress. While she danced around holding it up to her, Grandpa said proudly, "I got that in real cheap. Besides wholesale, it was marked down for end of season, which don't matter, 'cause what's end of season up north is just right for August down south." Mama and Papa both looked like they'd swallowed a straight pin. Mama said firmly, "Pa, have you forgot we're in mourning? Loma can't wear a white dress." Miss Love defended herself. "Your pa was dead set on that dress. I figured—" "A good looker like Loma oughtn't to wear black all the time," Grandpa interrupted. Aunt Loma's face prettied with pleasure at the compliment. "When you was little bitty, honey, your ma was always making you flowery dresses." "I figured it would keep till next summer," Miss Love put in real quick. Aunt Loma's face fell a mile. "You did it on purpose, Love Simpson," she said, and burst out crying. "Hush up, Loma," Grandpa ordered. Miss Love's face flushed. Closing her eyes for a second, she sighed and then spoke like to a child. "Tell you what, Loma, I'll make you a big, fashionable black hat with black ostrich plumes to wear this fall. Would you like that?" And Aunt Loma nodded through her tears. There were presents all around. Derby hats for Papa and Uncle Camp, a little fur muff for Mary Toy that had a bunch of silk violets pinned on it, a book for Aunt Carrie, a beaded purse for Queenie, and for me a linen duster and driving cap with goggles, just like Papa's. Well, that's it, folks, said Grandpa, real proud of himself. Santa Claus is over. Now let's go eat some good southern cooking. Mary Willis, you ought to see what them folks in New York call fried chicken. Nobody asked Miss Love to, but she explained about Yankee fried chicken. They use only a little grease, and after the chicken piece is brown, they put water in the pan and let it steam. Another thing about them Yankees, said Grandpa, heading for the dining room. They never heard of sweet milk. When I asked for it, the waitress lady brought me some with sugar in it. Papa said, Lord, make us thankful for these and all our blessings, for Christ's sake, amen, and started slicing the ham. Everybody was talking at once, except Mama. She was suspicioning with funny paper balloons hovering over her head. The first one said, how come all those nice presents? The next said, Love's trying to buy a ticket into the family, but how'd she get him to spend so much? The third balloon explained it. He's sweet on her. They were together in that hotel in New York, and now they feel guilty. They're hiding guilt behind all that Santa Claus. But then Mama's mind came back to the fact she had dinner guests. She called Queenie to bring the hot rolls. Papa kept trying to keep the talk away from New York, I guess thinking it would hurt Mama to have to listen to it. The whole time we ate, he was telling Grandpa about our motor trips. Described every puncture, every hill, every rut and gully. What I want to know, Grandpa said finally, turning to me, did you do any of the driving, son? Yes, sir. Drove all the way home from Comer. He looked proud. It sure is a wonder how young folks catch on. Miss Love now, she thinks she could drive a car. He grinned. But I don't know as I'd ride with her or any other lady. That got Miss Love's goat, I could tell. When it was time for dessert, Miss Love got up to help Mama and them clear the table. But Mama said, keep your seat. By not letting her help, she made it clear that Miss Love was company, not family. Grandpa noticed and got back at Mama right quick. Why don't you tell what all we done in New York, Miss Love? I mean, besides ride automobiles. Miss Love said sweetly, too sweetly, Mary Willis, your daddy will try to say he didn't have a good time, but he had a real good time. I got to admit, folks, it was a dang sight more fun with Miss Love than them times I went by myself. What did y'all do? Asked Aunt Carrie. The flowers in her hair today were daisies. Grandpa said, you tell him, Miss Love. Of course we were at the wholesale house most of the time, but we went to Coney Island one evening and walked on the beach. Another day we rode the ferry to Ellis Island, where they take in immigrants, and we visited a lot of churches and museums. I ain't talking about them dang churches and museums when I say I had a good time, Miss Carrie, Grandpa said gaily. What I liked was riding in them automobiles and seeing them musical reviews and all like that. Miss Love shook her head at Grandpa like a mother trying to shush a child in public, but he chose not to notice. He didn't see the shocked looks that Mama and Papa exchanged either. Aunt Carrie said, Did you hear that, Mary Willis? They went to a musical. How nice. Tell me, Rucker, did you see any theatricals? Any Shakespeare plays? No, Miss Carrie, we didn't see no Shakespeare. But we seen a stage play. The main actress sure was a looker. Aunt Loma came to life. What was her name, Pa? What was her name, Miss Love? Oh, it don't matter who she was. Well, and we went to a dance place. Miss Love, tell about us at that dance place. Miss Love, real flustered, said, Why don't you tell about the big new department store we went in, Mr. Blakesley? But Aunt Carrie was excited about the dance place. Did you dance, Rucker? You know I can't dance, Miss Carrie. He laughed and slapped his knee. I just watched. Miss Love done the dancing. Aunt Loma looked interested. Mama's and Papa's faces turned fiery red, and Miss Love just about died as Aunt Carrie said, Rucker, is it the style in New York these days for a lady to dance by herself? Nah. At the dance hall they got extra men to dance with unescorted ladies. Miss Love kept asking me to let's dance, so I give one of them men a quarter to be her partner. She's a crackerjack dancer, Grandpa bragged. I want her to learn me how. Aunt Carrie didn't feel the chill in the air, and neither did Grandpa. Did I ever tell you, Rucker, she asked him, about the time another young lady and myself got caught dancing? It was when I was a student in Athens. We were just having fun singing popular tunes, but the songs were not of the type approved by Madame Joubert. And then we started dancing.
Of course, somebody told on us, and here came Madame. Oh, my, it was an awful scene. Papa gave Madame my mother's piano for her school, and she let me stay, but I was restricted for the longest kind of time. The other young lady went home in disgrace and was turned out of her church. Oh, my, I don't like to remember all that. You were the smart one, love. Always do your dancing out of town. Thank you, Queenie, she said as the cook put dessert in front of her, coconut cake and fresh peaches. Nobody said a word. Finally, Aunt Carrie spoke again. One should be allowed to dance if one wishes to, and read Greek poetry and make use of human excrement for the beautification of God's earth. She spoke with a stiff dignity. It was the first time she'd ever let on that she knew Cold Sassy laughed at her behind her back, and that it bothered her. I knew Mama and them were shocked at Aunt Carrie, but she made sense to me. Long as you didn't hurt anybody, why shouldn't you dance if you like dancing, and marry again if you needed looking after? And go fishing or wear a flowery dress if it might lift your grief a little. Yes, and hold and kiss a lonely mill girl. Chapter 37 An uneasy silence followed Aunt Carrie's little speech. Then Grandpa yelled toward the kitchen, Queenie! Queenie! She came to the dining room with a clean vegetable bowl in one hand and a drying cloth in the other. Yes, sir, Mr. Rucker? This here's the best coconut cake you ever made. He took another bite. I want you to give Miss Love the receipt. I ain't made that cake, Mr. Rucker. Miss Mary Willis made that cake. Well, it sure is good, Mary Willis. I want Miss Love to make me one. Mama picked up her dessert spoon. Her voice iced over as she said, It's Ma's receipt, Pa. Well, copy it down here. Grandpa pulled a cigar out of his shirt pocket, bit it, and spat the tip on the floor. Taking a sip of lemonade, Mama looked right at Miss Love. It's in that old brown shoebox in the pantry with all Ma's other receipts, unless you threw the box out. I could tell that Miss Love didn't remember any brown shoebox. There was a silence while Grandpa struck a match on the sole of his shoe, put it to the cigar, and changed the subject. Y'all ain't even noticed my cigar. In New York, Miss Love kept telling me to try one. Said it's more modern than plug tobacco, and I'd like it better. I ain't smoked enough yet to know, but a cigar sure is tasty to chew. One thing about smoking, you don't have to spit so dang much. He looked over at Miss Love and winked. I mean, he actually winked. Plain as day, there was something new between the two of them. Winking is not something an old man does at a lady who only keeps house for him. They were excited, almost like two children with a secret. I couldn't figure it out. I stole a glance at Mama, and I could tell she noticed, too. I didn't know if she was wondering just how good a time they'd had in New York City or worrying what folks would say if Grandpa told it at the store about Miss Love dancing. As usual, Papa finished his dessert first and tilted his chair back on its hind legs. When everybody else was through, he let the chair down and said, Well, Camp, I reckon you and me better get on back to the store. Yes, sir. Mama folded her napkin carefully. Don't you think you'd better chauffeur our company home first, Hoyt? I reckon she was too nervous to want them there all day. Papa laughed. Law, I forgot. You all ready, Mr. Blakesley? Let Will Tweedy drive us, said Grandpa. I want to see is he any good at it. Papa hesitated. He looked at Mama. I looked down at the peach juice in my empty compote. What's the matter? Asked Grandpa. He ain't hit a horse or run through somebody's parlor, is he? No, sir, nothing like that, said my daddy. Then he took a deep breath and told me to drive Grandpa home, but then come straight back. You hear? Straight back. Yes, sir. He can't come right straight back, said Grandpa. I want him to help us get our things in. Well, soon as you can, Will, Papa said sternly. Yes, sir. Mary Toy wanted to go too, but Mama said no. With all the baggage, honey, there's not room. Now kiss Grandpa bye and thank him for your present. She didn't tell her to thank Miss Love, I noticed, and I didn't much blame her. Grandpa had rubbed in their good time a little too much. Papa turned the crank for me. Just before the engine caught up, Miss Love leaned forward and whispered, Will, your grandfather has saved the best surprise just for you. Grandpa opened his mouth to say something, but the motor drowned him out, so he shook Papa's hand and yelled above the racket, I'll be down directly, Hoyt.
"Mighty glad y'all are back, sir," yelled Papa. "The store ain't the same with you gone."
"Proud to hear it, Hoyt," Grandpa yelled back. "Giddy up now, son. Let's see does it know G from Haw with you a-holdin' the reins. It run fine for your daddy."
Soon as I shut off the motor in front of their house, Miss Love spoke up in an excited whisper.
"Tell Will what you've done, Mr. B."
Like he was about to bust from holding back the news, Grandpa whispered,
"I done bought me a dang automobile, Will Tweedy. A Pierce."
Blue eyes dancing, he reached in his vest pocket and pulled out an advertising leaflet covered with drawings of cars and pointed to a black open sedan. With him waving the paper about, I couldn't get a good look, but I saw enough to be flabbergasted.
"Boy, howdy, Grandpa!"
"Shh, don't holler."
Smoothing his thin mustache with thumb and forefinger, Grandpa grinned big.
"It's a secret. Ain't telling nobody but you till it comes in on the train."
Stepping to the ground, he opened the car door for Miss Love and reached for his grip, which was beside her on the back seat.
"Boy, howdy, Grandpa,"
I whispered, coming around the car. He put the grip down and handed me the advertising leaflet.
"See it? That one right there. That's the one I bought. They send it in a few weeks. When it's on the way, they're going to telegraph me which train to meet."
Grandpa and Miss Love stood there watching me read what it said under the picture. "Pierce, 8 horsepower, George N. Pierce Company, Buffalo, New York. Price $900 without top. Seats 4 persons, doors in back only, single water-cooled cylinder, jump spark ignition, planetary transmission, 3 speeds. Weight, 1,250 pounds.
"Gosh, Grandpa had spent $900?
"We seen a Ford that was just half as much," he whispered. "That's the one I wanted. But it was a 2-seater, and Miss Love said we got to have room to take folks to ride or we ain't gonna sell any. I saved by not buying one of them canvas tops. It costs extra, and they give me a dealer's discount besides."
Seeing my puzzlement, Miss Love whispered,
"Your grandfather's got his name on 2 dealerships, Pierce and Cadillac. What do you think of that?" "You mean we gonna sell cars?"
Miss Love shushed me.
"That's just what she means," whispered Grandpa. "We gonna sell automobiles. Come on, y'all, let's go in the house. Talking like this is a getting me hoarse."
"We gonna get rich or go broke, Grandpa?"
I whispered.
"Get rich," Miss Love said as we marched up the walk, her carrying hat boxes and us loaded with grips.
"No telling,"
Grandpa admitted.
"One or the other, for sure. Howdy, Miss Effie Bell,"
he called to what looked like a shadow just inside the Tate's front door.
"Howdy, Rucker,"
she called back, but didn't speak to Miss Love and didn't ask if they'd had a good time. Soon as we were inside the house, I said it'd be a miracle if we could sell more than 1 or 2 cars in Cold Sassy. Grandpa laughed.
"That's just exactly what I told Miss Love, son. I said, how many folks is going to shell out for an automobile when they got a horse and buggy in the barn? But Miss Love thinks she's figured out the receipt for success in the motor car business, and by dang, maybe she has."
"Tell him what all you plan, Mr. B."
We were still standing there in the front hall, so excited we hadn't even set down the boxes and grips. Miss Love was looking up at Grandpa like he was just the smartest man in the world.
"Well, I'm going to keep my Pierce parked in front of the store, and I want your daddy to bring the Cadillac down there. It might not sell no cars, but it'll get folks here from Isla and Lula, and Pocatello and Coma and Homer and Pendergrass. And after they get through looking at them cars, they're going to come on in the store and buy fertilizer spreaders and chewing tobacco and things."
"But it's the cars they'll go home talking about," said Miss Love. "Then first one and then another will buy one."
They were chock full of ideas. Miss Love was planning a window display of linen dusters, dust veils, and driving caps with goggles. She'd already ordered some of those. Soon as they sold some cars, she was going to order sirens, hill holders, auto robes, wind, water, dust, and oil proof, and chain pulls for getting out of mud or sand.
"We'll let people sit out front in the cars all they want to," said Miss Love.
Then she looked at me.
You haven't said much, Will. What do you think?"
I didn't think Papa would be all that glad to have folks pulling out the choke and flooding his engine, or turning the switch key on and off and using up his battery, or blowing his horn from morning till night. Not to mention how dusty the Cadillac would get, sitting out there on North Main. But I didn't say all that, because what could Papa do about it if Grandpa said to? I had the feeling that displaying the automobiles was Miss Love's idea, not Grandpa's. No woman would understand how easy a machine can get out of fix. Well, for that matter, neither would my grandfather. He never did have any sense about machinery. Hitching up Big Jack to the buggy was about his limit. He hadn't the faintest idea how a motor worked. Didn't even understand a bicycle. "What we all standing here holding all these grips for?" Grandpa said all of a sudden, laughing. "Let's unload first and talk second." I followed Miss Love into the company room, set down her baggage, and went out to bring in the rest of it. As I came in again, she called to me from Grandpa's room. "We're back here, Will."
"Yeah, come on back, son," he echoed. "We ain't half through talking."
"I need to get on home," I called, but after I put the grips down, I went back there like he said to. Miss Love was sitting on the blanket chest that Granny's angels had come out of. Grandpa had taken the cane-back rocking chair by Granny's side of the bed.
"What we expect to do," said Miss Love, taking off her hat and fanning herself with it, "is make people want what they don't know they want. You call that salesmanship, Will?"
"I call it hocus-pocus," said Grandpa, laughing at her.
"You'll see, sir."
Getting up, she rumpled his hair so familiar it made me uncomfortable.
"One way we'll make everybody want a car, Will, we're going places. And we'll take anybody out riding who wants to go. I'm sure Cold Sassy is already jealous as can be about your family taking all those nice trips. When Mr. Blakesley's car arrives, they just won't be able to stand not having one."
Grandpa leaned forward in the rocking chair.
"That's where you come in, Will Tweedy."
Granny's clock on the mantelpiece struck the hour.
"Can I talk about it later, Grandpa? I got to get home like Papa said."
He didn't even hear me.
"Son, when my black sedan comes in at the depot, you gonna be the one to drive it to the store?"
"Me?
Besides that," said Miss Love, "you're going to teach us how to drive."
"Me? Y'all?"
"That's right. If Mr. Blakesley and I can learn to drive, between us and you and your daddy, there'll always be somebody around to demonstrate." She looked over at Grandpa.
"Mr. Blakesley, I just thought of something else. Let's offer free driving lessons.
Once a man gets his hands on a steering wheel, he'd sell his wife and children if need be to get up the money to buy one."
Just barely listening, I could feel my punishment for kissing Lightfoot closing in on me.
I didn't think Papa would let me out of it, not even to please Grandpa. And I knew he wouldn't want any and everybody monkeying with his car or learning how to drive on it.
"Giving lessons sounds good, Miss Love," I said finally, "but it ain't gonna work."
"Why not? The man in New York said it takes only a few minutes. You just show a person this and that and let him drive a few miles and then teach him how to patch an inner tube. That's all there is to it."
"Yes'm, but if you offer free lessons, every boy in town is going to be sitting around the store waiting his turn, not to mention every man. And school's going to start up again in a few weeks, Miss Love. I won't be at the store like I am now."
She thought for a minute.
"Well, we could just have a drawing once a week. Yes, we'll have one every Saturday. Whoever gets drawn, we'll teach him to drive, man or boy."
"Not ladies?" I grinned. She looked surprised.
"Yes, of course. Men, boys, ladies, girls."
I didn't say so, but I had my doubts about any lady being able to crank an engine or change a tire. If Miss Love managed to learn, I didn't think any gentleman customer would ride with her for a demonstration. I mean, for one thing, she was a woman, and for another, she was a woman who had married a widower when his wife wasn't hardly cold in the grave, got caught kissing another man, made a scene in public, and then dog if she hadn't gone off to New York City unchaperoned with a husband whose name she wouldn't use and whose bed she claimed not to be sleeping in. No man in Cold Sassy would dare ride in a car with Miss Love Simpson. But nothing like that was worrying the two of them right then, and Grandpa had just as many plans in his head as she did. Lowering his voice, he said, "Now, Will Tweedy, you ain't to tell a soul about all this."
"Not even Papa?"
"No, not even him. I'm going to tell him and everybody that there's something big coming in on the train in 2-3 weeks. And I'm going to ask the town band and the Negro band both to come to the depot that morning, ready to play for a parade. But I ain't going to say why, and don't you either."
"Sir, what if somebody asks me?"
"Say you sure wished you knew."
"What if nobody comes to the depot, Grandpa?"
"Soon's they telegraph me from New York, we gonna drape a big banner across the front of the store, telling what train to meet. And I guarantee you, Will Tweedy, everybody in Cold Sassy's gonna come, out of pure curiosity.
and they gonna follow that Pierce automobile down to the store so they can see it up close. They mightn't sign up to buy one that day, but like Miss Love says, they'll start to want one. Now, what do you think of all that, son?
What I thought was Papa would snatch me bald-headed if he saw me driving without his permission. And how could I get permission if I couldn't tell him about Grandpa's surprise? Also, I worried whether it was possible to hop into a new automobile and drive it. What if it choked out and went dead, the whole town watching?
What if I can't get the darn thing started? I asked Grandpa. Your Pierce ain't going to start a run just like Papa's Cadillac, you know.
That didn't even give Grandpa pause. I got an instruction book here in my grip, and you got plenty of time to study it. You won't have no trouble, son. You'll drive just dandy.
Of course you will, Will, echoed Miss Love. She stood up. Goodness, I'm hot. I need to get out of these clothes.